and welcome to this episode of Unpack This Brain. I am Josh, and as always, I've got
Eunice. Hello.
We're back for another short series of episodes, and it's going to be about anxiety once again. We have talked about anxiety in the past, so we'll do a little bit of a 2024 reflection, I guess, on what our thoughts are, and we'll do a little bit of story sharing as well. But I guess because it has been a little bit of time since we last caught up, Eunice, on the podcast, I'm wondering how you're going.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the last time we caught up on the podcast would have been potentially March.
I think so. If not even earlier.
February. Yeah. So it's been a while. So little update, little fun update, is that I have moved on from my previous employment, which is really exciting for me. And I alluded to a lot in the last one that I was trying to do that and hoping to do that. So yes, now I'm in a different context, which I'm really excited to see how it can be a part of the pod, because it's no longer an education. It's working in the domestic family violence space, and it's with young kids now, as young as 5 up to about 14. So I'm working in a different, you know, age demographic now, and within a different context as well. Lots of overlap in what I did in education. It's all I did a lot of trauma work anyway in my education job, but this one has a lot of a focus on like family violence. So yeah, I'm excited to see what I can bring to the pod in terms of that context. But yeah, I'm really loving the place. It's cozy. It's got some really, I'm working with like counselors, like a lot more counselors this time. So I'm learning a lot, which has been fun.
Cool. I guess for me, it's same old. I'm just glad we are past the halfway mark in semester. So really just, I guess, from this point forward, it's preparing for the upcoming semester. So I think what a lot of people in, I guess, higher education secretly admit to is that it never really stops being quiet. Oh, sorry. It never really stops being busy. So there's always that first peak, and then once the lull sort of hits, you're like, okay, I guess it's time to start planning for the next semester.
Which, that's a very good point.
Yes, and I think you felt that. You must have felt that when you were working in education as well.
Always. I was lucky we had the little school holidays, because it was like a chance for a bit of a break. But then, yeah, also at the same time, you have to start planning for the next term. So, yeah, it was continuous.
Oh, dear. But I guess from my end, look, I made it past the 1 year work anniversary.
Exciting. So congrats.
I can theoretically leave at any time. But no, I'm planning on staying for a little bit longer. So I guess, you know, professionally it's going to be good to stay for a little bit longer and get a few things like settled in and embedded. So, but yeah. So I know, Eunice, we were talking off podcast about what we would talk about, considering talking about anxiety. I guess you mentioned you had a few questions, and I'm curious to know what those were.
Yeah, I was just doing a little bit of brainstorming, and I was like, oh, what would the people want to hear about in terms of anxiety? They're just really general questions that we could unpack together. So I guess the first one is, what is anxiety? Like, what is it? How do we define it, you know, in a professional sense? So, you know, I did a little bit of reading on it, because I have my own ideas of it, but I wanted to make sure that it sort of fit with what is also said out there about it from other professionals.
Sure.
But essentially, what anxiety is It is a feeling of reacting to a fear or a worry stimulus. So if there's something going on in your environment or in your relationships, then, or just anything that's going on around you that is scary or is worrisome, then that's when the anxiety feeling and response comes up.
Okay, that makes sense. If you're thinking about it from a response to stimulus, I'd also contend that it's a response to basically any stressor.
For sure. And it's something that's what I really want to highlight is that it's a really normal response. So, you know, the word anxiety can get thrown around a lot because actually everyone experiences anxiety. You know, it is a really normal response to something that is stressful in your environment. And where it gets to be more like a disorder, so to speak, I say this in quotation marks, is when the anxiety is more all-encompassing and it stops you from functioning in your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that's where it can become like a quote-unquote disorder. But everyone does experience anxiety and with things that are scary. Like when I was doing my reading, public speaking, it always comes up as like one of the big anxiety-provoking things.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. But I guess for you and I, we've had to do like a lot of speaking in our
roles, professions anyway.
Studies. Yeah. So we are, I don't know, I'd say lucky that I don't know if lucky is the right word, but we've been exposed to it enough that I think we both do it. But it's very scary for a lot of people, even people that are probably exposed to it a lot.
Yeah.
So that's just one I want to highlight as being normal to be anxious about. That's okay.
Cool. I guess I'm thinking about other scenarios where levels of anxiety could be heightened. This will be very relevant for the both of us. Going to job interviews.
Yeah, for sure.
I think
for sure.
It's so anxiety inducing because obviously you don't know what they're going, you know, your panel is going to ask you first and foremost. But I guess there's also, you could say there's a lingering sort of like confidence aspect to it where it's like, I'm not sure if I'm even the right person for this role. Why did I even get the chance to be interviewed? And all of those sorts of general questions around like, oh,
yes,
why did I even, is very anxiety inducing. And I can profess that I definitely get nervous. At when I have to be interviewed, or even I guess maybe this is culturally, speaking to my manager or my director, like people higher up on the chain of authority, that really can provoke a level of anxiety in me. I do agree, it's like it is very normal to experience that. But at the same time, if you like camouflaging well is also something that I've found to be a very interesting thing to do as a sort of coping mechanism. Like the whole fake it till you make it scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that fake it till you make it is a really good, I'd say relevant mantra for anxiety, because I think I've spoken to some people who have like lower amounts of anxiety and they don't seem to like, they don't subscribe to fake it till you make it as much. I think it's a really like good subscription to ones that have high anxiety.
Okay.
It's like, well, I have to function, so it's like I gotta you know just fake it till I make it so that I can still, you know, do my thing and all that and live. But another scenario that makes me think of anxiety, because I had like recent conversations about it, is the dentist. Like people are really frightened of the dentist.
I can see why.
Yeah.
But I would say any health profession, like if you're going in to see a GP, as well, or if you're going to see a specialist. But I get the dentistry thing, because obviously they're going into your mouth.
I do wonder if it's because it's so like invasive, like it's not just talking about things that are in there, and a lot of the time you are awake for it, so it's like But yes, I wanted to stress, like, it's a super normal, I reckon, when I don't reckon, I know, it says in the literature, where it's not something, what was I trying to say there? I guess it's not, this is so ironic, like, stress about that you may feel anxiety, unless it starts to get really, like, it starts to impede on your life a lot. Which is something we could go into a little bit later in terms of what happens if that is you.
Yeah.
And what to do in that kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other questions I had was around where does it come from? But I just wanted to see if you wanted to add anything else to that. What is it?
Not really. I guess we can delve into a little bit more about scenarios in which anxiety can be heightened and potentially link it to other mental health presentations. So, but yeah, I didn't have anything to add about the definition at this point.
Yeah. Did you want to go into that? Like what other scenarios?
Yeah.
It gets really
I guess it's also a very normal post-traumatic incident response. So, you know, if you happen to be a victim of a crime that involved, you know, your car, or like, you know, your car was stolen, or your house was broken into, or you were, for example, assaulted on the street, those sorts of incidents. Or I guess relevant for Australia is what happened in Sydney a few weeks ago. Anything post-traumatic, anxiety is definitely going to be a response, because you are going to want to, first of all, try and avoid that situation as much as possible. But also you are still in a space where you are trying to imagine different scenarios going through your mind about what could happen and the possibility of something negative again happening to you. So I just wanted to reiterate that obviously when traumatic things happen, you do go through that entire phase of different levels of emotions, but that anxiety still remains and may not go away for a while. Yeah, so it's all part of that. It's all part of that trauma and post-trauma response.
Yeah, I love that you've mentioned that, because it makes me think about the book that I'm still currently reading, or no, I've finished it actually. The body is called The Body Keeps the Score, which is essentially all about trauma and all about how the body has responses to certain stimuli that remind them of the trauma, or and so that it's sometimes not even, or a lot of the time not even a controlled response or a response that you can choose. Like your body will just start feeling the anxiety, which I think is a really good segue into like it's still going off of what is anxiety, but it's now like talking about like how you feel it, like what does it feel like, anxiety feel like. And that is stuff, a lot of it is stuff in the body, like your racing heart, like breathing really shallow or breathing really fast, sweating. I know I sweat, like when I'm anxious I sweat. It's a big thing, like, so that's something to do with your body temperature, not being able to be regulated. So, yeah, that's only some of them, but people have a lot of different responses depending on the person. I know people can get nauseous or, like, have digestive problems in general that are actually related to anxiety rather than, like a physical.
Yeah.
Physical, mental cause. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fidgeting as well. It's like the shaking arm or the shaking leg. Those all.
Yes.
I've seen them when I work with young people all the time, and even sometimes I do it as a coping mechanism. So,
yeah, Yes, me too. It's so telling, and it's one of those like trying to regulate by like shaking the leg to get some movement in.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is so valid. So valid.
Very much so. I'm curious, I guess, do you see, obviously now in your new working context, I'm curious to see, have you seen other manifestations of anxiety in the young people that you work with?
Yeah, I have. That's different to what I've in the past, because it's like younger kids.
Yeah.
So I guess with the younger kids, of a particular 5-year-old, that it manifests in like an attachment, because it's related to attachment mm-hmm. to her mum. So it's okay. A lot of like mum comes to session, you know, and like
yeah.
It's very much like my primary care is mum, and I can't keep her, I can't have her out of my sight just mm-hmm. yet. And I guess that is really different to what I'm used to, because maybe the young people that I saw at the school were like that at 5, but you know, mm-hmm. I didn't see them at 5, so it manifests in that way in different stages of development.
Yeah.
Manifests differently. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting. There's also like loss of being like, not loss of talk, but like less talk, like shutdown, almost like being in this shutdown mode of yeah. not being able to really talk or explain things that maybe someone who didn't have trauma at that age could do. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like trying to work with expressive therapies, or you know, therapies that don't necessarily have to be so like cerebral or like
yeah.
thinking, talking, but more like the processing, because trauma is in, and that's going to really test my knowledge.
Yeah.
There's two memories, and it's in the memory that's in the subconscious.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of the trauma sits. So you got to try and reach that to like help them process and bring it to the conscious.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess this is going to be a tangential question. Have you, in your practice so far with these young children, have you used sandplay therapy yet?
Yeah. I don't know why I laugh because when I got there, every room had a sandbox.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, wow, right? I'm like really here. I'm really doing it. Like, I love this. I didn't even have to like go find any. You didn't have to go buy resources. Really. No, they have it all. They have all, so there is this like a sandbox, but I haven't used it yet because I'm in this like, it's like a practicum where the sandbox is also like my it's like a table. So oh, I so use
you
that.
And the sandbox at the same
time. Yeah. The sandbox like inside, like you have to lift it like a desk. Oh, okay. Right. So like I just practically haven't used the sandbox yet, but I have all the symbols, and I use the symbols just not within the containments of the sandbox. We use it in like a doll. I have a dollhouse, so we sit in there, and so yes, a lot of that like play therapy, expressive therapy. So those are probably the two main ones I'm with the kiddos at the moment.
Fair enough. And I think, okay, for any of our listeners who are obviously not familiar with what we call sandbox or sand play therapy, it is really just a small enough sandbox, a tray of sand that you use in therapy. And then there's a variety of different toys like figures or blocks or things, and really it's encouraging the person who is present for therapy, the client, to show us, I guess, in a practical way, you know, manifestations of their anxiety, maybe exploring relationship like networks, support networks as well. And this is another tangent off that tangent. I'm just putting it out there just as a wild like quotation. But really, for anyone that plays Dungeons and Dragons, that's really just sandbox therapy.
I want to like, I can see you cutting this bit out, and then that's like that. This is
that's the real. We're going to reels now.
But, yeah, this is a statement for this whole episode.
D&D is just adult sandplay therapy.
that.
But it,
and why do I think that makes a lot of sense?
It does make a lot of sense because you're obviously you've got your narrative. It's an open world scenario. You're going, you know, there's a lot of situational stuff. You're having to interact with people. You make your own character, or the dice chooses for you what will happen. But really, in the grand scheme of things, and I've watched just enough Dimension 20 to understand, because I'm not a diehard D&D fan whatsoever, but I guess pulling on my counseling brain and knowing what sand play therapy and sandbox therapy looks like, it's just like, oh, I didn't really make that connection until we started talking.
I have never made... I'm so happy you've made that connection, because now I'm thinking, I know a lot of kids on the spectrum like D&D, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this could... It's such a good way for them to explore scenarios and, like, emotions and responses to things in a safe place, which is like, because it's the game, it's in a game.
Yes.
So, oh my gosh, I think I'm really onto something. My brain's just like, oh my gosh, I have to look this up after and try and create something.
But yeah, I was just very curious because obviously when we were exposed to sandbox therapy when we were both doing our masters, did you feel like it was a very emotive and very strong emotional experience for you?
I don't remember being exposed to it. So now did you get exposed? How did you get exposed to it?
I think we got exposed to it. It might have been just because obviously you did it full time. You did our masters full time, right?
Yeah.
And then I think it would have been... there was maybe it was the unit that we had to do before clinic. I'm not sure, because we did have an element of sandbox therapy in there, and maybe it was just the guests that they brought in.
That makes sense. How was it for you? I'm really curious.
It was a very interesting experience to first of all, like, tactile wise, and you're getting a sense of how to use the template, or, you know, the canvas of the sandbox. But then I guess, was it me or was it another student? Maybe it was one of our peers that was doing it. I was just observing. It was just a very powerful experience to just, like, see what, you know, and because obviously part of that is you get the client to set it all up the way that they see it, and then you as the counselor would come in and I guess get the client to do a little bit of a show and tell of why particular pieces arranged that way or blah blah blah. And to hear the client explain it, and then be asked questions of, okay, so what would you do to, you know, would you want to keep the character this way? How about, what happens if you add another figure in there? How does that change and whatnot? So I guess, much like many other expressive arts therapies that I'm familiar with and I enjoy doing, it was a very emotive experience, because obviously you get to see the shift happen, and it happens in a practical and very visual way.
Yeah, it's amazing. Someone told me something that really stands out about expressive arts, and it's that it is a vessel of language. So for kids, expressive arts and play is their language. So rather than us asking a question and then they respond with words, they are responding through the play and through how they express themselves in art or in symbols. And that was like, that really solidified how I could use that with what I already know in narrative and solution with adults. So it's like, oh yeah, yeah, okay. Love it.
Yeah.
So good. That was a little tangent, but if we were to wheel it back, it was to do with trauma and how this is really, like, valid ways to work with people who have trauma, because there are certain parts of their brain that still remember the trauma and probably haven't fully processed it. So things like expressive therapy and play allow it to be processed safely so that they can continue on with their lives, essentially.
I'm now thinking of delving into where is that? I just have to find this article. Now, obviously, we are ad hoc. We never plan these like to a T anymore. It's usually hiding in our chain of messages. Thank you for listening to this episode of Unpack This Brain. If you want to find us, we are on Instagram and Facebook. Just search our handle, Unpack This Brain. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a rating and review wherever you are listening to us. Maybe share us to a couple of your friends as well. If you'd like to share something with us, feel free to leave us a comment on our latest posts or send us a DM or even send us an email, unpackthisbrain@gmail.com. Our theme music is taken from a track called Spirals by Tanda. You can find their music on dantanda.com/music, dantanda.com/music. We are created and produced by the lovely people over at Great Mates Podcasts. Feel free to subscribe to any podcast created by Great Mates wherever you're listening. We would like to acknowledge that this podcast has been produced on the lands of the Larrakia, Turrbal and Jagera people, and would like to pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander First Nations owners, wherever we are living, working and creating.